The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold. Shugen Roshi is the abbot of both the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or to find out more about our various programs, please visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here today. As we both celebrate the person and the love and the efforts and work of Dr. Martin Luther King, and bring those, all of that to life here today in this place, within this gathering. Dr. King said, a riot is the language of the unheard. We might think about all the many languages, the different ways of expressing the calls that come from the unheard, those whose voices are not heard by those who need to hear them. They can come out as anger and rage, as sadness and confusion, but also as resilience and commitment, as spiritual power and compassion. In the Metta-sutta, the Buddha said that we might bring forth a deep, deep, heartfelt wish that in gladness and in safety may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, forsaking none, we will forsake none of them. The great or the mighty, the medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and those yet to be born, those heard and those not heard. And the Buddha realized that selfless compassion, great compassion, must include every being, every human being, every size and shape, every situation, every time and place, and every other being, animate and inanimate. It must include every being. And that has to include hearing the cries of Avalokiteshvara, the great bodhisattva of compassion, who hears the cries of the world. And that compassion has to be the hearing of those cries, those calls, and we respond, because these have to go together. We can't just hear the calls and not respond. And in order to do that, we have to deal with the suffering, not just in others, but in our own mind, in our own hearts. To alleviate others' suffering means we have to be prepared to be healed by others. We create delusion together. We awaken together. We fall down together. We rise up together. In the Lotus Sutra, there's a chapter on Kanon Bodhisattva, the perceiver of the cries of the world. And a student asks the Buddha, how does Kanon come and go in this world of suffering? How does she teach the Dharma to alleviate the pain and suffering of others? What kinds of skillful means does she employ? How does she appear? How does she respond? And the Buddha says, if there are living beings who need someone in the body of a Buddha to be relieved of suffering, then Kanon manifests in a Buddha body and teaches the Dharma through that body. If they need a person of wealth or a person who is poor, then she becomes that person, rich or poor. If they need a monastic, if they need a lay student, then she appears in that body. If they need someone who's young, a child, if they need an elderly person, then she appears in that form. In other ways, she appears in whatever way she manifests, however will serve others. That's her selflessness. And the Buddha said, and importantly, she bestows fearlessness on those who are in fearful, pressing, or difficult circumstances. This is why Kanon is called the one who gives fearlessness. Reflect on that, the one who gives fearlessness. How do we do that? Kanon Bodhisattva is, as we understand it in Buddhism, as we practice it in Buddhism, as we realize it within Buddha Dharma, Kanon is present in each and every one of us. That's our essential nature. It's our Buddha nature, which means she is present in every moment, that anyone, any person, in any place, in any circumstance, offers help to another, expresses their compassion, shows loving kindness, helps to reduce someone else's suffering or pain, helps to bring something good and beneficial into another person's life. No matter how small, no matter how simple, that's the manifestation of Kenon Bodhisattva. And they do this knowing that the one they serve, the person we face, is a Buddha. They are complete. They are perfect in their nature. They are dignified in their being. They are deserving of happiness and peace. They are deserving of compassion. Kenon Bodhisattva has no illusion that she or he or whoever they might be is in any way different than whoever they may be facing, whoever they may be trying to serve. That's their selflessness. And they practice selflessness. We practice selflessness. This is what our practice is: letting go of self-clinging, letting go of self-centeredness in our thoughts, in our speech, in our actions. And that within that selflessness, when we help someone, we help everyone. By alleviating the suffering of one person, we alleviate everyone's suffering. In the deepest sense, this is why compassion is the most spiritual of all human efforts, qualities, expressions. It has an outer expression, but at its core, it takes us to the very basis of our being in this world. And Kenon Bodhisattva doesn't respond to others out of a sense of obligation. She's not following a rule. She doesn't do it out of guilt or shame. She doesn't do it for reward or recognition. She does it because that's her nature. That's our nature, is to serve, to give, to be a benefit, to be compassionate, offering loving kindness. That's why loving kindness, that's why hatred and anger is always painful. That's why it's always destructive. That's why it always takes delusion to sustain it, because it is in deep conflict with our essential nature. So when we are out of our self-centeredness, out of suffering, are filled with anger, hatred, when others are filled with anger and hatred and act out of that, yes, they are suffering. But the suffering at the core, regardless of how we might think about it or rationalize it, is because we are in that moment not only not in accord with our own essential self, but we're also not in accord with others' essential selves and with the basic nature of the world. And so, of course, that's going to be painful. Of course, that's going to be like a great rift. In that sense, there is no personal freedom, no personal liberation, no separate safety, no individual delusion or enlightenment. That's how intimately we are bound together. So how does Kenon meet the one who hates, the one who is not crying out for help, who doesn't yet recognize how they project their own imprisoned mind onto the lives of others? Isn't that what we've been seeing in vivid display for hundreds of years? And most immediately, in the last weeks, in the last years, people's imprisoned minds being projected onto the lives of others. So how does Kenon meet someone who is not asking for help, who is not in their awareness crying out for help? The same. Compassion in Buddhism is likened to rain. It falls equally everywhere. And while each of us has one basic nature, we call it Buddha nature, awakened nature, we manifest it differently, unequally. because our world, our society, our history, our institutions, and our minds through all of those systems have created inequalities in our mind and between us. They don't exist by themselves. They're born from our not understanding things as they are. They're born from our greed, our anger, our profound delusion. But not being real, self-existing, doesn't mean that they don't have real consequences. Of course they do. And so in bringing compassion to all beings, we recognize that different beings need different forms of compassion. And so in the 10 values that came out of our Beyond Fear of Differences work, we speak of equity. That to create just outcomes, good outcomes, good lives, good minds, open hearts, we recognize that different treatment, including reparations, is sometimes required because of historical oppression and our varying positions in contemporary society. And so as I speak and I use the pronoun we, I recognize that I am positioned within a white body, a male body, and that that has come with enormous entitlements, unasked for, but I have benefited. And that when I say we, that in a certain way, I try to use that in a way that speaks of our universal nature. And I also try to be careful not to use that in a way that assumes anything about you, that understands that although we have one basic nature, we do in fact live in different worlds. And isn't that exactly what we're trying to address and really clarify and free ourselves of through our practice? And so may we ceaselessly work towards building a greater trust between ourselves and between our groups of identification. And this building of trust is, there's a greater responsibility in dominant groups. Groups of white people, groups of men, those in leadership, those who have greater power. There's a greater responsibility that those of us in those groups work hard to earn the trust of those who have been hurt beyond our imagination for hundreds of years. That's our responsibility, our obligation, not just to others, but to ourselves as well. That we be trustworthy to ourselves as well as others. And so in the 10 values, we speak of trust as cultivating and earning a confidence together between ourselves that we are working toward our mutual well-being and liberation. Imagine a group of people, a community, a nation who shared in that endeavor. That we are working toward our mutual well-being and liberation. We all know, and every religion knows, that if we were to put that, not just in thought, but in our deeds, as our fundamental, important commitment, that not only could we do that, but that the world would be an extremely different place. May we hold each other as we build trust between ourselves and be held in accountability so that we can ensure that our aspirations and our commitments to free ourselves of suffering that we would then inflict on others and that we do all that we can to diminish, alleviate the pain and the sorrow of others. Ensure that our aspirations and commitments to this are being manifested in what we do. Making vows is extremely important. Iterating those vows every day is extremely important, but it's not enough. To visualize well-being in the four immeasurables is a very powerful practice, but it alone is not sufficient. We have to actually be doing this in our lives in a way that becomes manifest, that is experienced, perceived by others. And importantly, we need to do this honestly and with compassion and loving kindness. Sometimes when we hold others or we ourselves are held accountable, it's painful because it challenges us to face aspects of ourselves that we would rather not acknowledge. We don't want to acknowledge that we harbor. As a white person, I don't want to acknowledge that I harbor racist views, that I have acted out of those views and hurt people that I care about, that I love, as well as strangers that have been part of systems that have done the same on a large scale. I don't want to acknowledge that. But if I don't, then I ensure that I will continue to perpetuate that kind of harm. And that is my commitment, is to cease, to go a different way. And so accountability in the 10 values is recognizing that the Sangha, which includes teachers, seniors, monastics, board members, students, committees, practitioners, are mutually responsible for upholding these very values and communicating with each other. We have to do this together. And so may we develop our skills, our understanding, our capacities. May our capacity become large, particularly for those of us who in particular need to do this work of undoing racism. May we stretch ourselves and become large in our capacity to face the suffering within ourselves and others. Like the hands and eyes of Kenon, you know, you've seen those images where she has a thousand, a hundred of arms and hands spreading out, radiating out. And in each hand is an implement, something that she uses. Right? The question to the Buddha was, what is the skillful means that is used, that Kenon uses to alleviate suffering? And so we have to develop those skillful means. We have to develop it through our understanding and capacities and by working on it. And so the value of the whole person framework, that in our study, Liberation of the Self, we recognize that because our social identities are not experienced in isolation, we can't examine them in isolation. We have to look at ourselves as a complex, as an integrated whole being. And not just whole within our body and mind, but whole within our world, our society, our community. All of the ways in which we have projected out into the world and been projected upon in turn, all of those experiences that have helped to form our sense of both who we are as a self, as an identity, and what the world is. And to examine all the ways in which those have been formed falsely. Those have been formed within greed, anger, and delusion to foster various forms of oppression, denial, rejection, to exclude. And so may we dismantle, may we realize as empty of in any inherent quality what we call racism. What Isabel Wilkerson has rightly, I think, and powerfully framed as caste. May we dismantle this in every and any way we can, and ultimately by realizing how profoundly constructed it is, not just historically, not just through institutions, but in our mind, how we give it solidity. May we be the one who gives fearlessness. What a wonderful aspiration. May I be one who gives fearlessness to the world. How do I do that? Well, I have to confront my lack of fearlessness, my lack of courage. So that means I have to work with my own fear, my own trepidation, my own hesitation, particularly in moments when they arise, particularly in moments when I feel overwhelmed. And so there is the value of courage, which we describe as the ability to step forward, to be vulnerable, to tolerate discomfort, and hold space for new ideas. That's our Buddha mind. It's powerful in its boundlessness. When we don't put up walls in the mind, there's nothing that we can't allow in. And that allows us to become generous, to really bring forth our natural generosity, to be magnanimous, to be abundant in our heart. And then to let that come out in our words, our thoughts, our actions. The Buddha once said, if human beings could only see things as he did, then he was confident that we would all dedicate our lives to giving. If we could only see the world as he did from this deeply enlightened view, then we would see profoundly how essential giving is and how natural it is. And it would not be such an effort. And so the value of generosity, which we speak of as the willingness to embrace all of our experiences within the Sangha, within the world, with openness and appreciation. And the willingness to give and take in feedback, to be held accountable on the impact of our actions as an essential part of our Dharma training. How else can we study the self? We're too accustomed to ourselves. We've been living with ourselves our whole lives. We've been listening to our voice inside of our mind our whole lives. It's very hard to hear ourselves clearly the way other people do. Our facial expressions, our energy, we're so inside of it. It's hard to have that kind of clarity. It comes more and more with practice. That's part of what we're developing. That's part of our skill. But we need the help of others. That's where others are like mirrors reflecting back. And then we need to meet that with in generosity, that we are open in receiving that. Fearlessness in the Bodhisattva path is spoken of as understanding that this path is long. I don't expect to see the end of racism in my life. I do expect to commit my life to ending racism and to hold those together. They are not in conflict. So fearlessness means to recognize that the path is long and to free ourselves from the notion, the dualistic notion, that I am going to fix this. Now I am free to apply myself to liberating racism in every way possible. Fearlessness is to recognize that the challenges we meet and will meet are real and many, and that the suffering is great. And in that, we see and are humbled, naturally humbled by the depth to which we have each been socialized and trained to see ourselves and each other unequally within our ideas and beliefs, our emotions that arise, the assumptions we make, our projections. This is what we must see and relinquish free. Kuen Lung, the great ancestor, said, free the thoughts in your mind. Do not imprison them. Those biased, false ideas, beliefs, and emotions, and so on, we need to free ourselves of them, and then they are free. And in that, they become transformed. And so humility, the recognition of the depth of our own conditioning and the vastness of the path. And again, to recognize that for each of us, these values and how we hear these teachings are going to be different. There's a universal quality, and then there are ways in which they're going to be heard, felt, experienced, and acted upon differently by each of us based on the position we have in this body, within this society. And that's our work, is to each take it in and sort of understand that within ourselves, apply it within ourselves. In studying the self, we have to study each other. They're not separate. And so we have to understand how culture and identity and language histories have all been inculcated within our fabric of being, and in a way that is used to separate us from each other, to create a sense that we are absolute beings, autonomous, independent, and so to validate or justify oppression, to justify superior and inferior, high and low. In other words, we must end the hundreds of years of institutionalized segregation between us, within us, which helps to perpetuate our delusions about race as an inherent fact. And so the value of the whole person framework. In our study and liberation of the self, we recognize that because our social identities are not experienced in isolation, we can't examine them in isolation. And this brings us to an authentic experience, I believe, of respect, a profound respect and appreciation and love for each other and for every being. Not in spite of our perceived differences. It's not that we have somehow overcome them, but in understanding them as they truly are, now we can rejoice, really. We can celebrate. We can be joyful in those differences. The Metta Sutta says, being freed from hatred and ill will, whether we are standing, walking, seated, or lying down, freed from this, we can now live within what the Metta Sutta called the sublime abiding, the abiding of a Buddha, of an awakened being, open, courageous, resilient, clear-seeing, no longer holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one. And this means you and me and every person may now have a clarity of vision. And this brings us into a state of reverence. Reverence is a deep respect for each other's humanity and how we appear in the world, what we call identities, and the transformative power of the Buddha Dharma, this profound Dharma, to have reverence for each other. And so we can see how each of these values, all of these teachings are this tremendous medicine for the ills that we see running wild in our world. May all beings be at ease, the Metta Sutta says, let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. That's our practice. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. And when we find ourselves wishing harm, we recognize that. We bring our practice to it. We bring mindfulness to it. We understand it. We understand that anger arises. We understand that rage rises. And it's not arising independently. It's arising in mutual relatedness with things that are happening. It's a message to us, in a sense. Practice is our commitment to how do we meet that with those 10,000 hands and eyes. Even as a mother protects her life, with her life, her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart, should we cherish all beings. And so to be truthful, to be true, to have our eyes and hearts open, when we see more and more clearly, really is the only viable path. There is no other viable path. And that's why for every life that is taken through the violence of oppression, countless lives are shattered, countless deaths of the spirit and soul. Everyone is affected. It's easy to have anger. It's easy to hate. It's easy to bring that forth in other people. That's what every demagogue knows. That doesn't take any skill at all. Compassion, loving kindness, love is the greatest spiritual challenge and practice for us as human beings. It's also our most natural and essential nature. So why should it be so difficult? In a sense, because we have been trained to make it difficult. But we can reclaim that which is our true being, our true nature, compassion, loving kindness, selfless love. And this is the love that demands that we go into the deepest parts of our mind and our heart and our body and our lives, that we deeply examine our views, our understanding, that we bring forth great aspirations, all so that we can manifest as the great Bodhisattva. This is my wish. This is what I bring into my vows every morning. And when I bring those vows to mind, I hold in my mind people, you, faces, the Sangha. I also bring to mind people in the world that I've never met that are suffering. And I also bring to mind people that I've never met who are creating that suffering. And I wish for them, I extend to them well-being, safety, gladness, freedom from suffering, loving kindness, equanimity. And I do that every day. And then I devote my life and my day to doing what I can in as many ways as possible through my place and situation and field of influence to bring forth that vow, that commitment as a living reality. And that's what I hope all of us are doing from our own places, using our own strengths, using our own situations, our own fields of influence. If we're all working together, that's a good thing. That's a good way to meet the madness, the insanity of the world that would cause us to despair, but we cannot. In a sense, we cannot afford to indulge in that. And so we really do need each other more than we know, I think. I can honestly say that all of my years, these decades in practice and training have just continually opened up to me more and more how profoundly and in ways I never imagined I need you. So thank you for being here today and giving yourself to your life, our lives, Buddha Dharma. Please be well.
Thanks for listening. Did you know that Zen Mountain Monastery is live streaming all Dharma talks and daily Zazen during the coronavirus quarantine? Visit our website to learn about all the online programs being offered at this time. Just go to zmm.org and click on the link at the very top of the page, or scroll down and click on Retreats.